Hello, Kirsty Melville with you, and welcome to 360 Documentaries here on RN. Now, I spent a lot of last weekend looking through old photos and memorabilia. They just snapped me back to a certain time, a place, a mood, things I'd completely forgotten about, and feelings I'd forgotten I'd had. Well, today we have two stories built around old photos and the tricks they can play on our memory and our imagination. In about 40 minutes, performer Paul Capsis describes the first time he visited Malta, a place he'd only known from black and white photos and his grandmother's descriptions.
I took a lot of photographs and I did buy some souvenirs, but the images were the strongest in my head. The most bizarre thing that happened was when we landed, and I remember getting there at the airport and wanting to kiss the ground and just was overwhelmed. I just left dreary, grey England and went to Malta with the beautiful, beautiful blue sky and the sandstone. And the most bizarre thing that happened as I came through the through immigration, there was a man that looked the spitting image of my grandfather. And it was like he welcomed me there. It was the most bizarre thing. I literally caught myself. I couldn't breathe. I just was, oh, my grandfather, that man is the spitting image of my grandfather. He looks like him, dresses like him, everything. And he was dead by then. And I just couldn't believe it. And went into this world, this dream of Malta.
That's Paul Capsis coming up a bit later in the program. But now to an unusual story from Cambodia. When the Khmer Rouge came to power in 1975, most of the country's artists and musicians were systematically murdered. One of these artists was the songwriter Voi Ho, or so everyone thought when he disappeared. By the end of the Khmer Rouge agrarian utopian nightmare, almost 2 million people had died. And while so much Cambodian art and culture had been destroyed by the regime, the pop music of the 60s and 70s never died. Surviving musicians found each other. Old cassettes and photos were discovered. And a younger generation of fans fell in love with the music, especially with the songs of Voi Ho. 30 years passed, and then 5 years ago, Voi Ho reappeared. Today, Rosa Ellen tells the mysterious story of the songwriter.
Anyone over the age of 40 in Cambodia can reel off the names of singers of the 1960s and 70s. Sin Sisamut, Pan Ron, Rosaray Satia, singers from what's known as the golden era of music and film. Most of the artists were killed during the Khmer Rouge years. Including Voi Ho, he was a prolific songwriter. Some say he wrote the lyrics to as many as 10,000 songs. Voi Ho is the reason I'm sitting here at a cafe in central Phnom Penh talking to Chia Heng Yi. He's a 41-year-old IT teacher who's a big fan of the golden era music and a little contemptuous of the current era.
Voi Ho was famous in the old days, but not anymore because music and the melodies have changed so much. I don't listen to today's songs. I prefer the oldies. A friend of mine was in a relationship with a girl. They broke up and he was heartbroken. Somehow he met a songwriter and told him his story. This man wrote a song for my friend about his breakup. I think it was called Heartbreak at UME. That's a university in Battambang. I looked at the lyrics carefully and I came to the conclusion that they were not the work of a young person. They were in the style of the older generation of songwriters. I decided I wanted to meet up with the man who wrote this song. So I did in Battambang. That was 5 years ago.
Heng Yi was shocked when this older songwriter, who went by the name of Savannah Rith, revealed himself to be Voi Ho. He was living a quiet life in poverty in the countryside, teaching music.
When I heard that he was alive, I was so happy because he's such a talented writer. I wanted him to teach young people how to write songs like in the 1960s.
A growing number of the younger generation share Hange's love of this music. It still sounds so youthful. In the late 50s, something special happened to Cambodian pop music. People were picking up Western instruments, guitar, saxophone, keyboard, violin, borrowing songs and styles, and making pop music with a distinctly Cambodian sound. The result was electric.
Music was flowing into Cambodia from overseas, and Cambodian music just got better and better, right up until 1975.
The place where Voi Ho lives is Battambang, a major town in a province in the northwest of Cambodia. As well as being a former Khmer Rouge stronghold, the town's known for producing the most famous voices of the 60s. People like rocker Pan Ron and Rosaray Satia, whose pop hit I Am 16 featured lyrics by Voi Ho.
My name is Seng Dara.
My name is Seng Dara. I have many jobs, but my main job is researching old songs by Sin Sisamet, Roz Saray Sotia, all the songs from the 1960s and 70s.
Seng Dara is also a radio DJ in Phnom Penh. He's 31, but already has more than 10 books under his belt, most of them based on his own research on the lives of the singers and movie stars of the golden era.
I know many stories about him, but I tell you the main point. Voi Ho was born in Battambang province.
After he finished school, he came to Phnom Penh to study and work. His first wife was from Kampong Cham and was just a housewife. When he came to Phnom Penh, he made friends with musicians. He heard the songs of Sin Sisameth and the famous composers of the time. A bit later, he married the movie actress Dara Cham Chan. They worked together. One composed the songs, the others sang them. Voi Ho was sent to prison because when he married Dara Cham Chan, he already had a wife.
And he also talent.
He also had talent. He had a natural talent. He liked singing. He liked dancing.
He liked dancing.
So he was a lively character, you think?
Yes, Voi Ho was very friendly.
Oh, he was very sincere and friendly. He was no ordinary guy. He was the professional type. He was handsome, and he never wore sandals. He always wore boots, a shirt tucked in, and drove a car. He was cool. My name is Chum
Se.
I learned music when I was young. Later on, in the 1960s, I worked for Sin Sisamut. In the late 1950s, there were no recording devices. When they sang on the radio, they sang directly on air. I was the youngest violin player. We recorded songs like 100 Rice Fields. I met Voi Ho in 1970 when the coup d'etat against the King Norodom Sihanouk erupted. After that, they stopped recording on vinyl. No one bought records anymore. We changed to cassettes. Wai Ho was the most famous songwriter in Cambodia. He worked for lots of record companies, and he wrote the words for the songs in Khmer movie soundtracks. Sometimes they used the melodies of Chinese or American songs, but they put Khmer words with them.
One of the artists Wai Ho wrote for was Sin Sisimut. He was the Elvis of Cambodian music, but even that doesn't quite do him justice. He embodied a new sound. He didn't just sing, he also wrote songs, had his own recording studio, arranged music, toured with King Norodom Sihanouk. And he worked closely with Wai Ho, who by the 1970s was writing most of Sisimut's songs.
And also he ran very clever.
Wai Ho was also very good at business. He earned money from his songs. He also made a booklet like this.
So this booklet is a yellow booklet and it has faded sort of Technicolor pictures. It has Sin Sisimut.
Sin Sisimut, Sohmat and other, he also singer.
And there's the music and lyrics printed.
Yeah.
And the guitar chords.
Other composers rode motorbikes to work, but Wai Ho had the money to buy a car, a big house, all from his songwriting business.
Kyo Sanan was a session musician with his own band. He played on some of Wai Ho's songs in the studio. He explained to me that by the late 60s, the recording industry was a big business in Phnom Penh.
The process went like this. Once a composer finished writing a song, the recording label bought it from them. Then they had to choose musicians like me to record for them. The big record labels in Phnom Penh were Cambodia Tha, Somlein Tha Ho, Chan Chaya, La Si, Hey Hey. They paid us a lot for each song and for songs in the movies. We made good money.
Although Phnom Penh had all this music and filmmaking going on, Cambodia was constantly in chaos. American bombings, the Vietnam War over the border, not to mention its own political upheaval. When the city fell to the Khmer Rouge, all art and music was furiously destroyed. So it's astonishing to hear that Kyo Sanan held onto his record collection throughout it all, something that could have had him killed. Even when he was moved to a forced labour program, he dismantled his record player and hid the parts in a hut.
The last time I saw Wai Ho was in 1975. It was April or March. At that time, we were seeing each other every day. And on that day, he met me at the old market and asked me to work with him on an album. I went to his studio, but unfortunately, I left the recordings of the songs there. I did not bring them home. After that, Pol Pot invaded. We were separated. He went his way, I went mine. That was the last time we met.
Rosaray Satia was easily the most famous female singer from the era. Her voice was high and sweet and powerful. If there's a Western equivalent, you might say it's Patsy Cline. She partnered perfectly with Sisimut's smooth vocals. they sang a lot of duets together. Like Roy Ho, Soraya Sitia wasn't limited to a particular genre. She performed romantic ballads, rock and roll, and dance music called Romvong. Roa Samoan is Soraya Sitia's sister. She lives in a small wooden house behind a pagoda in their hometown. She has a shrine to Soraya Sitia on her wall and welcomes me warmly. It's a public holiday, and she mentions that people in Battambang like to picnic at a nearby dam for the weekend. But she never goes there because during the Khmer Rouge, she was one of thousands forced to work on its construction, and it just reminds her of sadness.
When she was a child, she loved sport and singing. She learned to sing from Thai pop songs, theatre and ayai, a traditional type of singing. She climbed trees and sang, and she won the school singing competition. Her first hit song was Blue River. Have you heard that song? She started out performing at the Blue River restaurant in Battambang.
Like Sisamut, no one's certain how or where Soraya Sitia died. Her sister has her own theory, but there are others too. After the Khmer Rouge retreated and the Vietnamese army arrived in 1979, there was no doubt that Sisamut or Soraya Sitia and her four children had died.
They asked me to give an interview on Apsara TV about my sister and the music of the 1960s. Surprisingly, Roy Ho heard about me through the show. He came and found me and we cried so hard. We hugged each other very tight and cried. I thought he died. I asked him, why don't you tell people who you are? He said that he was afraid of people not supporting him because his face wasn't like it was before. He used to be so handsome without any scars.
After meeting the friends and fans of Roy Ho, I was curious to meet the man who could turn a pop melody into poetry. He lives with his family in a humble Besser brick shack on an unpaved Battambang street. When I visit, his teenage kids sit politely in the background while his wife gets out some books for him to flip through. He seems shy and a bit uncomfortable, but he gets excited when we talk about songwriting.
A good song needs three elements, meaning, content, and value. Then there's excitement. Each song has to stir up emotion. Only then will an ordinary melody turn into something special. You work with your imagination and your mood. For instance, when you are writing a song about Battambang, you think about the landscape, the season, emotions, and regrets. What are the people who live in that place like? What work do they do?
On the walls are pictures of his younger self, copies, black and white photographs of a handsome Chinese Khmer man with an Elvis pompadour and a thoughtful expression. They're the pictures that appeared on the covers of his singles like Devil Woman and My Bloodstained Hand. The similarity between the portraits and the man before me is hard to see because Ho has a large swollen purple discoloration over much of his face. He says it happened gradually after surgery and started with a small scar. The condition swelled up his lips and right eye and made him reluctant to leave his home.
I've got a new set of dentures. Then I had eye surgery. After two operations, my face developed an allergy. It has a pinkish tone now. When it started, it was just a red dot. 2 years later, it swelled up. People don't recognize me because my face has become like this. How could they?
What was your first hit song?
At the time, there were many songs. I can't remember. There were too many songs. My memory isn't as good as it used to be. Ever since I have had this high blood pressure, I only have about 50% of my memory.
Were you friends with any of the famous singers or songwriters of that period?
I can't remember much anymore. I can't remember things in detail. I remember more about the process of writing and composing songs.
Ho moved back to his home province of Battambang 6 or 7 years ago, but seems to have suffered a stroke and has had bad health ever since. He seems fragile and easily confused. Although he has white hair, he still looks youthful for a man in his 70s.
I'm over 60 years old now, but on my birth certificate it says I'm in my 70s. 68 or 69? Oh no, I'm 68. I was born in 1945.
I left the interview feeling disappointed. Ho didn't seem to remember any of the details of his life before Pol Pot. I started to wonder whether he'd been traumatised by his experiences in the 1970s under the Khmer Rouge and what effect it was having on his memory. A year ago, Voi Ho went on a popular TV talk show to talk about music legends of the Golden Era. It was his first public appearance.
I was watching TV a few months ago and I saw an announcement that said Voi Ho was still alive. It's now 2013. I wonder why he didn't show himself before this, in the 80s or the 90s.
About this man, I have so many times.
I've heard about this man so many times, on radio, on TV, in magazines and the newspaper. But this man is not Voi Ho. Voi Ho died already. He died in 1976 between Kampong Chenang and Persat province.
This man is not Voi Ho.
Hello, mom.
Hello,
owner. Yeah.
He called you up on the radio.
He called me because he has many books.
He called me because he has many of my books. Maybe his children bought them for him. Then he called me a second time.
And what was your reaction? What did he say to you on the phone?
He said to me, "Oh, Mr. Dara, I'm happy to see that you are doing research into the songs of Sin Sisamet and my songs as well." I said to him, "Your songs? Who are you?" He said, "I am Voi Ho." I thought, this man is lying to me. I didn't say anything. I wanted to know what he'd say next. He told me his first wife was so-and-so, his second wife was Dara Cham Chun. He had two children, and his hometown is Battambang. In the Pol Pot regime, the soldiers sent him to this place and to this place and this place.
When I heard he was alive, I didn't believe them. Then one day he showed up eating noodles at Tmoda restaurant. Sengdara dragged me there to confirm if it was really him or not. He looked very different. I was speechless because this guy could not do anything. How could he claim that he was Voi Ho? I just left and did not even eat the noodles.
That's Chum Sek, the violinist who last saw Voi Ho in 1975 when they worked on an album together. He lives in an outer suburb of Phnom Penh. While we're talking, he gets out a Voi Ho cassette to show me. Do you remember him having a scar on his right cheek?
No, he did not have one. His face was clean, like in this picture.
You're pointing to the picture of Voi Ho on the album cover here.
His face was very smooth, like a movie star's.
Some Cambodians were suspicious of Voi Ho's TV appearance. The TV station that Voiho appeared on is politically aligned to Prime Minister Hun Sen's government. He's been in power for 28 years and is one of the longest-serving prime ministers in the world. On the show, Voiho told the host he was worried about violence during the upcoming election and he supported the direction of the government. These comments fired up pro-opposition blog and YouTube channels. Some said it was too convenient. A famous figure from Cambodia's golden past, thought lost, appears before an election with a warning about political change.
He's not character or Mr. Voiho.
Voiho wasn't interested in politics. He wouldn't have supported the current prime minister.
You're with 360 Documentaries on RN, and we're in Cambodia with journalist Rosa Ellen. She's investigating the mysterious story of the songwriter Voiho. It was presumed he'd been killed by the Khmer Rouge, but a few years ago he was discovered alive in Battambang.
I was starting to doubt that the man I met in Battambang was Voiho, but then I met Heng Sriang. He's the director of the Cambodian branch of PEN, the international body that champions freedom of expression. He invited the songwriter to come and present at a PEN conference in Phnom Penh last year. He sees him as an important but neglected figure in Cambodia's cultural history.
I invited him here. I invited Voiho here, you know. We agreed to invite him because we assume that he is the knowledgeable person. This year we plan to highlight him, bringing him to Phnom Penh. We may highlight him as intellectual of songs, of music in Cambodia, so then he could appear again in the public.
Does he have memory problems when he's talking about his past?
Yes.
Do you think that's a result of trauma or is it the stroke?
It's a stroke and a trauma. Yeah. He told us like that. He had difficult to talk. He feel that he's scared to talk, you know. So we gave him good care, lunch or dinner when he was here.
Sriang says the doubters just haven't spent quality time with Voiho. When Sriang first heard about him, he gathered a team of teachers and musicians to investigate. They spent 3 days probing his memory and studying his new music compositions.
Young people who are involved in a musical field recently, they did not do a research, but they just said, it's not Voiho, it's not Voiho. So, and Mr. one of that is called Dara, Mr. Dara. Mr. Dara is the person who commented many things about music, but I invited him to meet Voiho and also invited him to go, but he did not go. I said, if you want to know the truth, I invited him to come.
Sriang gives me the name of another old songwriter living in Battambang, a man called Nyet Chip Lang. He went on to become a writer, and although he wasn't famous in the golden days like Voiho, they moved in the same circles. The day I visit Nyet Chip Lang, it's the height of the rainy season, and Battambang has flooded. When I finally arrive at his house, to my surprise, Voiho is there too. He looks different to the last time I saw him, in better health and more alert. He's wearing a neat traditional style shirt and seems very relaxed with his friend. What the pair of them say kind of confirms for me that he is Voiho. He is Nyet Chip Lang.
I first heard about him from a friend of mine. Then one day I was exercising along Songkhae River and I met him and he explained to me that half of his body had been paralyzed. After talking to him, I found out that he was Voiho. He looks different, but I could still recognize him by how he talked, especially his beauty mark on the right side of his chin. It was undeniable. He didn't know who I was at first, only after I explained myself to him. I used to know him so well. He even remembered my brother's name. I'm a doctor, so I started to treat him. Finally, he could walk again and drive his car. Before that, half of his body was paralyzed. It's called hémiplégie in French.
Today, Voi Ho is remembering much more than when I last visited him. He starts talking about his life in Phnom Penh in the 1960s.
It was fun. I was free to do anything. I could go wherever I wanted. I had more money back then. Now I cannot earn much because of my health. Life was really fun in those days. We used to wear cut-off jeans, a shirt, a cap, and a watch.
He used to make his living from being an artist. I was an artist too, and I used to act in the theater. Now I'm a dermatologist. Singers like In Jing, Sin Sisamut, and Sohmat were all studying medicine like me. They've all passed away. I'm the only one who survived. I'm not very public about being an artist. I've been traumatized since the Khmer Rouge. Educated people were not needed, even in the Vietnamese era. So artists like Voi Ho and I, we hid our identity. I can't pinpoint the exact time I last saw my friend here. We were separated in 1975. It was chaotic. It's hard to remember.
In 1975, I was evacuated by the Khmer Rouge with the singer Mia Samon to Kien Svai. After 2 or 3 months, we were taken to be executed near Bang Snao. It was drizzling. I was hit 3 times with a rifle and I passed out. I did not know what happened. When I came back to consciousness, I crawled away and met an old shepherd. I then ran west. That's all I remember.
Voi Ho tells me he then went to Vietnam and married a Vietnamese woman before migrating to Germany and having children with a German woman. For the past few years, he's been writing and selling his songs anonymously to the Khmer Surin, the ethnic Khmer people in Thailand who have their own music industry. Coming away from the interview, I really wanted to believe these charming, modest old men. And they weren't the only artists who initially hid their former lives. Movie actress Dee Savet was one of a handful of performers who fled Cambodia before the Khmer Rouge. The walls of her sunny apartment are plastered with old photographs and memorabilia of her film days. When I arrive for an interview, she insists on showing me her pet bird Cacao, who speaks French. Savet moved back to Cambodia from France in 1993, but when she first arrived, she was reluctant to reveal who she was.
When I got off the plane the first time I came back, I was teary. I didn't sob, but I was teary. It'd been nearly 20 years since I left. Some people thought I died in the Khmer Rouge time. I didn't tell anyone when I came back. I rented a place to stay for a month. I bought a bicycle to ride around and see how things had changed with my own eyes. I wore a disguise, a hat and sunglasses and a mask. One day I drove past a fire near Vilrin. There was a crowd of people. I got out of the car and I saw locals trying to put out the fire with buckets of water. In France, we've just called the fire brigade, but I couldn't see any fire trucks. I was freaking out on the road. I yelled at them, "Why aren't you calling the police? Why aren't you calling the fire trucks?" All of a sudden, I heard a voice calling, "Di Savet." I couldn't believe that someone was calling my name, that someone recognized me. A man ran towards me and said, "Di Savet, you're still alive? I heard that you died." I asked him how he knew it was me, and he said he still remembered my voice.
After seeing Di Savet, I started to think there were lots of reasons why someone might change or hide their identity after the chaos of Pol Pot. To try to understand why, I visited Yuk Cheng, the director of the Documentation Centre of Cambodia. For years, the centre's been gathering evidence and testimonies that are used in the international trials of the Khmer Rouge. Yuk has had to reconstruct the stories of many Cambodians' lives and deaths during that time.
When it comes to individual, I met people, some claim to be a monk today, but telling me that they were former prince. And I quickly checked with the royal palace, but then his name not appear in the royal family.
Is this something to do with trauma? Are they deluded? Or is it to do with survival?
You know, I'm not a psychiatrist or a medical doctor, so I cannot confirm. But for me, who is a social scientist, I think it had to do with identity. People just want to be somebody. People feel that they were nobody, or they were dehumanized by the Khmer Rouge, so they want to become somebody. And knowing that a lot of people have died, perhaps certain identity that they like, they in favor, they attach to it, become them, you know? I think, you know, people also change their name. I think because of the fear, because the Khmer Rouge have looked for identity, they look for a particular target group like teachers, doctors, and then they carry such a fear after the Khmer Rouge, because after the Khmer Rouge, it was Vietnamese occupation, and therefore people are still living in fear whether their real identity will be accepted. All these survivors, especially the musician, you know, after the Khmer Rouge, they come and look for each other, and artists were actually perhaps the most independent group of peoples after the Khmer Rouge that welcomed by the government of this country. So why Voi Ho never appear in public? I don't know how he look like now, you know. This has been 38 years. But kind of strange to me, don't you think?
But there is one person who may be able to confirm Voi Ho's identity.
My name is Rina Bo, and Voi Ho is my uncle. Voi Ho and my mom are cousins, first cousins. I live in Long Beach, California. A man called from Cambodia to my brother and telling my brother that Voi Ho is still alive. We're all so happy, you know, like my mom, she could not sleep. She was all happy because my mom was very close to Voi Ho before the war, very close. We asked this man if he could get the phone number of Voi Ho, who claimed to be Voi Ho. So we got the number, and then my mom called. I was there when my mom called. The moment she heard his voice, she said no. She gave me a signal that it's not Voi Ho. The voice is not the same, and then she asked a question about our family, where he live, how many kids he has, how many wives. He did not answer correctly. 1975, that when the communists took over, and then Voi Ho and our family got separated. According to my mom, he's not the type that can live through what we lived through Cambodia during the communists. He cannot survive one day without proper food, proper place to stay. That's how he is. She said there's no way he survived during Khmer Rouge. I told her that I do not remember how he looked like, but from what she described and pictures and, you know, all the stories she told me, I want to go there and find out myself so we don't have doubt. My mom wrote me a question what to ask him, and then I had some picture of his family, his father, his sister. So I brought it with me to show him. He did not know those people on the picture. He would not ask me any question. If he would have realized, he would ask me who I'm, related to and all this stuff. He had no question to ask me, and I showed the picture. He kept saying that, you know, he has stroke, and half of his brain is like almost paralyzed, that he cannot remember things. He said that if he can keep those pictures, he can maybe later he can recall.
What do you believe happened to your Voi Ho?
He got killed, I believe, with the other singers, because when they left Phnom Penh, they left together with like Sin Si Tumut, Phan Ron, and Hasalan, all those people. I feel very sorry for the man. I don't know why he had to claim he is Voi Ho. I feel very disappointed and sad, you know. I'm glad that I made that trip last year.
Talking to Rina, it seems clear that the man in Battambang is not Voi Ho. As I look at the photos on the album covers, it now seems obvious that they're not the same person. He could even be 20 years younger than the real Voi Ho. It's come down to something more complicated than just a physical similarity. The detractors insist that the real Voi Ho was entirely different, outgoing and entrepreneurial, and wouldn't be poor and in hiding. The Voi Ho I met isn't seeking royalties from his old hit songs, and his friends, new and old, admire not just his past glory, but his current songwriting skills and his knowledge of the golden era.
Each of us cope with genocide in different way based on our own strengths. Like for me, I cope with genocide because of my love for my mother. And genocide can do nothing to me because I love my mother. Even they try to separate me, they torture me, they kill all of my mother's siblings. So for me, it was my strength even today to do this work. People use religion, people use belief, people use family. Sometimes people do music. He might be the one who used music as part of his life to cope with genocide, perhaps damage his emotions, his life. So to remember all his music, it helped him live as of today. At his age, it was the age torn in between being drafted to fight the war or being someone on the streets and enjoy life. So perhaps back then, you know, he wished so much to be who he is now. And perhaps back then, his life were perhaps been stretched by the war. And no one wanted to fight the war, even though it was at the age of 10. I saw people 18, 20, 22 were drafted and went to war and died, you know. So that could be something that has been threatening his life and then repeated again by the Khmer Rouge period. And now he chose to know all his music, to cope with it, to live with it, and he's here.
The Songwriter was produced by Rosa Ellen and Claudia Taranto, with technical production by Stephen Tilley. Thanks to Virak for translations. And if you'd like to compare the photos of the old and the new Voi Ho to decide for yourself, just head to our website, abc.net.au/rn/360.